We know no one's journey is the same. That's why Delta SkyMiles moves with you. From earning miles on reloads for coffee runs, shopping, and things you do every day, to connecting you to new experiences, a SkyMiles membership fits into your lifestyle, letting you do more of what makes you, you. It's more than travel. It's the membership that flies, dines, streams, rides, and arrives with you. Because when you have a membership that's as unique as you are, there's no telling where your journey will take you next. Learn more at delta.com/skymiles.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution. We're discussing competitiveness, anti-competitiveness, monopoly, bigness. But I want to get very specific here because Richard's colleague, Cass Sunstein, who has served honorably in one or more administrations, certainly in the Obama administration and now is sympathetic to the Biden administration, has written in protest of George Stigler's idea that industry acquires the regulatory body or makes the regulations work for the industry. And he objects on the basis of several instances where he participated during the Obama administration in new regulations. The one that seems most neutral to me, Richard, Mr. Sunstein writes, in 2014, the Department of Transportation issued a final rule mandating rear view cameras in new motor vehicles. The rule was strenuously opposed by automobile companies. It was projected to impose more than $600 million in annual costs. Mr. Sunstein, if I understand correctly, is saying this was for the public good. We did it without factionalism in the government, and the industry did not benefit from it. Do I read him correctly, and is he accurate?
Well, I mean, it's complicated again. There's certainly the following argument that could be made in favor of what Cass said, which is there are a large number of accidents that take place because people have imperfect knowledge of the what's going on behind them. Generally speaking, if you're trying to talk about accidents, the basic theory says whenever you're in transition, landing a plane, taking off, and so forth, is the period of maximum risk. Getting out of driveways in reverse, right, is exactly one of those kinds of situations. There are small children who live on residential seats, and if you're just simply looking in the side mirror, you could overlook them. Having this thing mandated in the back essentially is good. The questions, however, are more complicated than that because it turns out there is a voluntary market for putting these things into place. And at the time that the thing was mandated, large numbers of upper-end cars all had these kinds of devices. So then what you do is you put the mandate on, and now you're going to do it with respect to all cars. It means that the new cars that come in will, in fact, be better. But the higher price means that it's somewhat less likely that people who have old cars will now buy new cars. That means, in effect, that if somebody has a 10-year-old car that they might have traded in for a newer car without the mirror but might have been better in other ways, they're not going to do it. So the older cars without the rearview mirror are going to remain in stock longer than they otherwise would have been. So now what you have to do is to kind of figure out which way the trade-off is going to go. If the industry is against it, that's not conclusive. They may be more interested in profits in these circumstances and things. But on the other hand, again, it's difficult. Suppose somebody now has a child that is hit, and the accident could have been avoided with the use of one of these required mirrors. Somebody's going to sue this particular company claiming that this is a product defect and that, in fact, the company should be responsible along with the driver. And we know who has the deep pockets, and we know who's likely to be subject to this. So what happens is you get all of these things swirling around in there. And that regulation certainly, I think, comes much closer to the line. That is, I can see why it's being imposed under these circumstances and many other things that are going on. So, for example, if you start looking at disability regulations and so forth, I always like to take people to the University of Chicago and to the law school building. When the renovation took place, there's just an elaborate set of all sorts of ramps and special elevators and so forth. That cost essentially 25% of the additional cost of transportation or of new construction of these new things. And it turns out there's nobody there typically to use them. We did have one extraordinarily gifted student who was seriously disabled. And the irony was that the stuff that was put in place to deal with the general case did not help her. And so what the law school had to do was to put in special other kinds of devices that were used for one person and for one person only. And so you start asking yourself, is this worth it? given the delay costs that we have, the loss of utilization, the higher maintenance costs, generally speaking, I think the answer to those cases is no. And that for law schools and other kinds of buildings where you have young, active people, if there's somebody in a wheelchair, there are four able-bodied individuals who can lift them over the threshold quite literally into the class and did it all the time. And in fact, I remember the day that our building was dedicated at the University of Chicago. There was a woman who had a broken leg and she was sitting in a wheelchair and there were a series of steps and there was one of these elaborate places, things that you could put her in. Nobody could find the key, so four people just picked her up and took her downstairs. She said thank you. And you could now see that four able-bodied men in that particular case outperformed the machine, which to my knowledge has never been used in the 25 years that it sits there. So you have to really be extremely careful about the way in which you deal with health and safety.
I want to sum this up in your remarks, Richard, about George Sigler, celebrating his the 50th year since his original oppression essay. He was anticipating the Biden administration in 2021. You write that industry loses to organized factions and that factions can easily become anti-competitive. Have I read that correctly? And is that watchword in Washington? Does Washington pay attention to those details?
Well, the answer is there are so many anti-competitive forces out there. If you are a sort of believer in the strong New Deal situation, you think the definition of a market failure is a market. And so therefore, you're always going to find something that you have to check and to change. And it turns out that in some cases, there is, in fact, an imperfection out there. But if you take into account the cost of regulation in order to fix it, those costs are higher than the original impact. So what you always try to do as a general theorem, and it's widely not acknowledged, you see a barrier to entry, try to knock it down, and the competitive forces will tend to take care of some of the difficulties. What happens in many cases is exactly the opposite. You leave the barrier to entry up there, and then you have all sorts of mandates. So, for example, the mandate that prohibits telemedicine.
We have 1 minute. 1 minute, Richard. Go ahead.
Okay, it's just an absolute travesty that people can't get information across state line, and it's much better to open it up to that kind of competition than to sue the AMA or some other doctor groups for various kinds of monopolistic behavior. And so the lesson that you want to learn is first deregulate, open up competition. Do not spend your time trying to counter it with regulations and antitrust suits and so forth, and that mistake, adding on additional regulations for dubious ends or when deregulation may serve them more cheaply and more effectively, is the lesson that you really want to learn from George Stigler.
Richard Epstein, senior fellow of the Hoover Institution, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago, and George Stigler, publishing in 1971, The Theory of Economic Regulation, still right in front of the headlines. This is CBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
We know no one's journey is the same. That's why Delta SkyMiles moves with you. From earning miles on reloads for coffee runs, shopping, and things you do every day, to connecting you to new experiences, a SkyMiles membership fits into your lifestyle, letting you do more of what makes you, you. It's more than travel. It's the membership that flies, dines, streams, rides, and arrives with you. Because when you have a membership that's as unique as you are, there's no telling where your journey will take you next. Learn more at delta.com/skymiles.
This is Julian Edelman from Dudes on Dudes with Gronk and Jules. Sunday mornings, I've got my game day ritual. Coffee, lucky socks, and now new morning Uncrustable sandwiches.
It's all about that 12-gram protein boost with the new Uncrustables Bright-Eyed Berry or Up and Apple flavors.
Bright-Eyed Berry's got a feisty receiver energy.
Up and Apple, your classic do-it-all tight end.
Soft, pillowy, packed with protein, and easy enough for Gronk to grab from the freezer.
Whether you're on the couch, driving to the tailgate, or heading to the locker room, new morning Uncrustable sandwiches are the MVP of snacks.
Your new Sunday kickoff ritual starts here with new morning Uncrustable sandwiches packed with 12 grams of protein.
Having MG can make cooking difficult, but over the years, I've found some really helpful tools and tips that I'm excited to share. Hi, I'm Alicia. I think cooking should always be fun, creative, and of course, delicious. These black bean burgers are hearty, full of flavor, and MG friendly. You're gonna love them.
Check out Alicia's Black Bean Burger cooking video and other recipes full of tips and tricks for managing common MG symptoms while cooking only at mg-united.com.
Ready? Let's cook.